Welcome back to Cartoon Cast, a fortnightly podcast hosted by two adults who aren't ashamed to proclaim their love for cartoons. I'm Christina Warren.
And I'm Micah Sargent, and this week we are talking about Ho Ho Ho, two of our favorite animated Christmas holiday kind of specials. So before we get into that, though, we've got a little bit of follow-up. Cartoon Network is up to some pretty cool stuff, Christina, right?
They are. They're up to some really cool stuff. So Cartoon Network partnered up with Scratch, which is a toolkit to help kids and basically anybody actually like learn how to code. They've the Scratch project. It basically helps you, you know, build your own interactive stories, games, and animations, and then you can share them with the online community. They partnered and the We Bear Bears team partnered with Scratch to bring some special We Bear Bear themed tutorials to Scratch. And this coincided, it came about a week before the Hour of Code or the Week of Code, which was last week, but it's available online. We've got the link in the show notes. It's really cool, I think, as a way to like take kind of a modern property and help encourage kids to get into coding, or anybody really to get into coding.
For sure. I mean, I was going to say, I am not ashamed to admit that I kind of played around with it there for a little bit. I don't think it's necessarily just for kids. If you are wanting to kind of dive into coding and just kind of figure out the basics of it, because really to me, I think coding is one of those things where, really getting down like frameworks and concepts is so important to future understanding. Like there are some things where you can kind of, like history or something where you can read along and you don't really need to frame everything at first. You can just kind of, you know, roll into it and gain an understanding. This is where you kind of need to have that top down look at things. And so, you know, to pair something like Cartoon Network, which of course is so pervasive with children, with Scratch from MIT, I think is really, it's a really nifty idea. And I personally haven't watched We Bear Bears. I don't know if you have, Christina, but
I have. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. See, I need to check it out then.
You have to check it out. It's really good. And one of the things I really like about the tutorial is that it's perfect for animation, because coding and animation have a lot in common. You know, when it comes to kind of programming something, it's not that different from animation, you know, where you have to think each step out in advance. And then when you put it all together, it gives you, you know, a finished product. And seeing some of the examples where you are kind of animating things, I think is a great way to kind of show kids or anybody really, this is how stuff works together. And then you kind of get a not only a visual, like a code perspective of how something works and what functions are and how altering certain axes or certain objects will result in different end results. But you kind of get this weird, it's kind of this great thing for kind of learning how animation works too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we will of course include links to that in the show notes, but we just kind of wanted to do a shout out to Cartoon Network and MIT for putting that together, because it's so important these days for kids to learn coding skills, and kind of wish that it was something that I had picked up when I was younger, because now, much like learning foreign languages as you get older, it is kind of difficult to retain these things. You should definitely check that out. And, you know, now we got to talk about something so doggone important. Our anime overlord, our anime queen, the inimitable Simone de Rochefort, has officially passed her judgment on Pokemon. So, Christina, what is the final judgment for Pokemon?
Pokemon is anime. Exactly as we said, Pokemon is anime. It is official.
We passed the test. If you haven't checked out last week's episode, do go back and give it a listen. We were talking about Pokemon at the end. It was a show that I was watching at the time, and I said that it was an accessible anime, you know, for people who wanted to get started. And then I kind of backpedaled just because I was concerned that maybe it wasn't considered an anime technically. But we decided to reach out to Simone, the god of anime, and she declare that Pokemon passes.
And then since then, we actually had someone on Twitter who used to work for the distributor of Pokemon in the US who was like, oh yes, this was anime, we classify this as anime, it's completely anime. So
we've got a specialist and royalty both declaring
exactly
that Pokemon is anime. So I don't think it gets any clearer than that, folks.
No, I mean, Simone's word was enough for me, but it was just nice to have, like, you know, additional word too. But Simone's word was enough for me because Simone is she's the queen and we bow to you.
We do indeed. And somebody else who we would like to give a shout out to is our first iTunes reviewer.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's so exciting. I hopped on there not too long ago. I was checking out to see making sure everything got plugged in and popped in correctly. And Jordash141, thank you so much. You popped up as our first iTunes reviewer and it wasn't a 1-star review. So that was good.
No, it wasn't. He was super nice. And since then, we've actually had Review Music has left us a great review, too. But Jordash141, thank you for listening. We really appreciate you. Thanks for leaving the review.
So, I suppose now it's time to dig in. So,
yes.
As we mentioned, we're going to be talking about how, you know, Christina picked out a holiday special. I picked out a holiday special. And then we both watched each of them. And
yes.
So now it's time to talk about them.
Yeah. We didn't intend for this to happen, but we wound up, each choosing a Matt Groening show. I chose an episode of The Simpsons and Micah chose an episode of Futurama. Obviously, there are hundreds of cartoon holiday specials out there, and many of them are very good. And I actually almost originally picked something from King of the Hill, which is notable because they have really messed up, really kind of depressing, kind of like, wow, Christmas themed episodes that are great.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other shows that obviously have great holiday episodes too, but for both of us, it really came down to Mr. Matt Groening and the Simpsons and Futurama.
Yeah. So let's get started with The Simpsons. Christina, what show did you ask me to watch after you pulled all of Twitter?
After I pulled all of Twitter. Well, here's the thing with The Simpsons. They've had like 13 or 14 different holiday themed episodes over the years because the show's been on. It's now in its 26th season. So the show's been on for a long time or 27th season, I guess, I think is what they're in now. Anyway, the show's been on the air since 1989. And as a result, there have been a lot of really good holiday episodes. In fact, the very first episode of The Simpsons, roasting on an open fire, was a holiday-themed episode. It was called The Simpsons Christmas Special, and that kind of served as the pilot for the show. And so that's – the holidays in The Simpsons are pretty intrinsically entwined. And when I thought about it, I actually had a couple of episodes that I could have chosen. There was Miracle in Evergreen Terrace. There was Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire. There was – Grift of the Magi. There are a number of really good episodes of the show, right? There are a lot of them. But I kept coming back to, and Twitter agreed with me, Marge Be Not Proud. And Marge Be Not Proud was written by Mike Scully, and it aired during the 7th season of The Simpsons on December 17th, 1995. I consider, and I'm a pretty big Simpsons fan, I consider, and I think a lot of other Simpsons fans agree with me, that season 7 of The Simpsons was its best year. I think that it's absolutely the best season of the show. There's some really great episodes in earlier seasons, the Conan O'Brien years, a lot of people really praise. He was active, especially in seasons 3, 4, and 5. Season 6, which is when Mike Scully and Bill Weinstein and Josh Oakley took over, was really good. Season 8, they did season 6, 7, and 8, or excuse me, 6, 7, and 8, and part of season 9. But I feel like season 7 of The Simpsons, which coincided with when I was in the 7th grade, was the it's kind of like peak Simpsons for me. There are just a lot of really great episodes. And I think that that's really proven by this episode, Marge Be Not Proud, which is – you know, you hadn't seen this episode before, Micah, so I'm curious in kind of getting, you know, your feedback before we get into kind of the episode details. But I feel like this is not just a great holiday episode. I feel like it's just like a generally great episode of like in cartoon canon. Like I feel like it's just a really fantastic episode of television. Medium aside, actually, I feel like it's really heartwarming. It's really just it gets you on every level. And it reminds me anyway when I watch it, this is why cartoons are a powerful medium and why we shouldn't, myopically assume that they're just for kids or that they're just for this or that.
Exactly. I have to say that there were two occasions at which I got goosebumps. And while it's not much to say this because I am kind of an overly sensitive person, I also cried during this episode, not even gonna
lie.
This is a really, really, I was absolutely surprised and also very happy to have watched this episode. Yeah, I think that this stands on its own just as really good storytelling. And also, yes, kind of steps outside the realm of what people see. People have this certain expectation, I think, of cartoons, and that they're almost always supposed to be this kind of 100% feel good and not serious thing. And this gets into some real issues, and it really, it got me right in the feels, I've got to say. So I'm really happy that you picked this one. There's an article that I'll have to link up in the show notes I came across. And I can't remember what the site was, but they ranked, the holiday, or the, in this case, the Christmas episodes of The Simpsons. And, this one actually came in second. And then I believe what came in first was the pilot. This was almost to be at the top of that list. And I think there's a reason for that. It's an incredible episode. We will eventually get into this, but stands in stark contrast from the yes. special that I chose for sure.
Oh, totally. It definitely does. So the episode starts out, you know, it's Christmas time. Christmas is coming. And, you know, Marge is obviously very excited. It starts actually with Marge kind of tucking Bart in, and you have this very sweet scene where she's singing him this like little
caboodle song. Like
she's this little poem. She's like, oh, it's the time for, you know, the sleepy train. You know, she's singing in the song, and he's like, Mom, you know, stop babying me, stop doing this. I'm 10 years old. I don't need this.
All aboard the sleepy train to visit Mother Goose. Barty's stop is snoozing. Lane to rest his sweet caboose.
And from that point on, you know, there are a couple of other kind of storylines that happen within it. It comes down to this new video game comes out called Bone Storm, and you have to kind of understand for the era that Bone Storm looks—it's a fighting game, and it looks a lot like what I guess like Mortal Kombat 2, yeah. which would have come out at the time, would have been like. And so it was
super
one of those
bloody.
Super bloody, super violent, one of those games that everybody wants. And, you know, Bart and Lisa are watching TV, and they're saying, you know, tell your parents you want Bone Storm or go to hell. And she's like, I want Bone Storm or go to hell.
He runs right into the kitchen and says it right away to Marge. And Marge is like, yo. And before we get past that bed scene, I just have to say, I actually busted out in laughter because, after the nursery rhyme that Marge sings, she then tries to give him some advice that starts with life is like a box of chocolates from Forrest Gump. And so Bart puts the trash can on his head and starts banging a stick on the yes. trash can, and then he lifts it up and she's still going on, so he puts it back down and keeps banging on his head. So I thought that was kind of a hilarious little moment.
Oh, it totally was. So, you know, so he's all excited about Bone Storm. Costs $59.99, and so Marge is like, that game's very expensive. You're not getting that. And he's of course disappointed. He runs and sees that the comic book store has Bone Storm in the window for 99 cents. And of course, the comic book guy, you know, insists on telling him, no, that's not the cost of the game. That's the cost to rent it, and I don't have any. But you can, and this is a callback for later, rent, you know, Lee Carvalho's, you know, putting challenge.
May I please rent it, please?
No, you may not. I am all out. Though I do have a surprising abundance of Lee Carvalho's putting challenge.
Oh.
He then heads over to his friend Milhouse's house, and Milhouse has the game. And Milhouse enters his name into the game as Thrill Ho. And I have to admit this now on this podcast, during Simpsons Trivia, which I played extensively in college, our team name invariably had some sort of Milhouse reference. Sometimes it was Alf Poggs. Sometimes it was Thrill Ho. Sometimes yes. it was other things. But Thrill Ho was always one of my favorites.
We should note, too, that there is a Maxell tape commercial gag. Whenever Milhouse is playing the game, you see a side shot of him and his hair is blowing back as he's playing the game. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, no, it totally is hilarious. And then, you know, Milhouse does not want to share this game. You know, Milhouse is very not at all wanting to share the game. And so he's like, Mom, Bart's cursing. He gets dragged out of the house. He's like, what? But I didn't do anything. Damn it. You know, he starts to actually curse.
As he's cursing,
people.
Yeah. I'm not swearing, people. Damn it.
I'm not swearing, damn it.
Hey, what the hell?
No.
Damn it, I wasn't swearing.
Right now.
Out.
So he heads over to the Try and Save, which is kind of like their version of Walmart. And you see, this is the first time we see, I can't think of the kid's name, who's just this rich bratty kid who's just the biggest brat you've ever seen in your life. And his mother, who, you know, they totally look like that, those sorts of, we all know the type of kid.
Yeah.
You know, the mom looks amazing. She just doesn't care. Oh, you know, whatever.
She's like, not even hearing what he's saying.
She's like, I thought you already had a bonus room. He's like, no, you idiot. I had this. I want this. And she's like, you better get two. I'm not sharing with Caitlin. He's like, okay, honey, whatever you want. You know,
and we've all known these kids growing up.
We've all known these kids. And that's the thing. Like, you feel for him. And so he's kind of looking at the game lovingly, and he really wants this game. And the bullies from school, Kearney and Jimbo and Nelson Muntz come over, and they're showing off how they shoplift. Nelson has stolen another vest, which is very funny.
Yes. I know what I like.
Right. So he's got a vest literally on top of his other vest, and Jimbo is putting something under his hat, and they're talking
football.
They're talking about this four-finger discount,
yes,
which is funny because, you know, the Simpsons very frequently acknowledges that they have four fingers.
Are you guys shoplifting?
Four-finger discount, dude. Shoplifting is a victimless crime, like punching someone in the dark.
And so Bart, you know, feels like, okay, well, I can do this. I can shoplift this. And so he takes the game and puts it in his jacket, and he's about to leave the store, and he's yanked by a security guard.
And we should note, too, remember that he's not only encouraged by the bullies, he's also encouraged by Simpsonized video game characters.
Yes.
Mario, Luigi, King Kong, Sonic, and then, of course, the putter guy all appear on screen. And I love how Sonic comes on and he's like, do it, buy it, take it, or not buy it, but steal it. And he's just around on the screen, and Luigi, of course, is the bad guy, and Mario's like, no, don't take the game. But yeah, then he ends up getting it, and he thinks he's free. He walks out of the store and he's like, I've done it, I've pulled it off. And then, as Christina noted, the security guard with the tattoo on his arm grabs him and pulls him back into the, well, I guess he did ask him to open his jacket, and Bart's like, I don't think this is the kind of jacket that opens.
Right. But Bart's trying to do everything he can not to get caught, but of course he does get caught. And the actor who plays the security guard is Lawrence Tierney, and Lawrence Tierney is apparently well known for being kind of gruff and honestly very difficult to work with. On both the director commentary for this episode on the DVDs and also on the director commentary for the Seinfeld episode where he plays Elaine's father, on both of those commentaries in different shows and commentaries, you know, recorded in different years, the directors and the kind of the writers comment on how difficult he was to work with. He gives great performances, but apparently he was not a very nice person to work with. And so it makes his performance in this role, I think, even more notable when you realize that kind of like they had a very hard time directing him. They had a very hard time getting him to kind of understand he was doing a cartoon.
Yeah, that adds another layer to it. And he was difficult to understand at times. And I was like, why didn't they have him re-say that line? But now it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think they probably tried and they were like, all right, we're going to get what we get with this dude. All right, cool. He's this very gruff, you know, security guard, and he's got like Micah said, these tattoos, and he basically gives, you know, scares the crap out of Bart and says, I'm going to call your parents and let them know, you know, that you shoplifted. So he calls and he leaves this, he starts talking to them, and you feel like he's talking
directly to Marge or somebody.
Directly to Marge, and Bart's freaking out because he's like, oh my God, my parents are going to kill me. And he's like, well, they weren't home. I left a message. And Bart's like, oh, thank God. Because Bart's like, well, if I can get home before, you know, the answer machine tape, ask your parents, kids, about answer machines. you know, I can delete the evidence. And before he leaves, you know, the guard is like, I never want to see you in this store again. And Bart's like, fine, you know, I'll never come back. He gets home and he replaces the answer machine tape with a summer camp tape, which leads to a very funny gag where Homer is listening to the messages and he's like, hello, Mata. Hello, Fada.
Here I am at Camp Granada.
Marge, is Lisa at Camp Granada?
It's like, Marge, is Lisa at Camp Granada? You know, it's very funny.
Oh, dear. And then Bart's like, I'm going to put this answering machine tape where no one will ever listen to it, which, of course, is in the actual tape holder for the Camp Granada song. It's like, yeah, no one is ever going to listen to that.
No one is ever going to listen to that. A number of times during the course of The Simpsons, they show off Homer and Marge's very weird collection of music, and you see some terrible stuff, and I love that that's something they keep, especially during kind of the mid seasons of the show, something that they kind of kept alive. Is like these two have really bad taste in music, which is kind of great. And so, you know, so Bart, he thinks he's home free. He's like, look, as long as I never have to go, you know, back to the store, I'm good. He's super excited. Marge wants to take the whole family out to get a new a Christmas photo taken. Mm-hmm. Every year she goes through, you know, something has managed to go wrong in the photos, usually at Bart's behest. Bart has done something, you know, that kind of ruins the family photo. And so she wants a nice Christmas photo for the holidays. And so she said, okay, we're going to go to the Try and Save. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And Bart is in the car and he's just terrified. You know, he can be like, how am I going to go back to this store where I've been told basically a very scary man with tattoos never to come back?
Yeah, because he threatens that if he does come back, then he's going to be sent away to juvenile hall, which then we see this hilarious cutaway where all of these little juveniles have these little like gaming chip type things or little, I don't know, little tokens, and they walk up and they give the guy the token, and then they get this present that comes from, I think it was like a thrift shop or something.
Yeah.
So one guy walks away with a book full of carpet samples, and he's like, oh cool, a book full of carpet samples.
Yeah, that's Nelson, and Nelson gets very excited by that. And what the funny thing about that fantasy is that Nelson probably in his real life, based on what we've seen in other episodes, would have been very excited by carpet.
Well, there you
and
go.
And because his own home life is kind of terrible. So yeah, so Bart's afraid he's going to get sent off to juvenile hall. He's afraid that his parents are going to find out. So they get to the Try and Save, and everything's going fine, and they're trying to shoot this photo. He's trying to get out of the store before he's caught, and he's almost out of the store. They're taking the photo, and when you see the photo snap, everybody in the family looks great, except Bart is being yanked out by the security guard.
We see that doggone hand and the tattoo again. And really, Christina, I think it's, I want to ask you, you know, it's at this point that, of course, the security guard is like, yo, this kid was shoplifting and he's eventually going to grow up and be an adult who's also bad or whatever. And Marge is sticking up for him at this point and saying,
yeah,
he's not a bad kid. He's great. He's my little boy. Da, 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 da.
I'm afraid your son broke the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not steal.
That's crazy. Bart's not a shoplifter. He's just a little boy.
At this point, Bart is still, I guess, not the delinquent that we know him to be. Is that the case? Or what's going on?
No, well, he's always been a delinquent, but he's never been a bad kid. You know, he gets into trouble, but he's not like Kearney and Jimbo and Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Those are the real delinquents. And there have been a couple of episodes, and there are a few after this, but you know, where he maybe crosses the line. But I mean, you know, he's like Dennis the Menace, is always okay. How Bart has kind of been. You know, he maybe goes too far sometimes, and he certainly drives his principal and his teacher crazy, but he's not a bad kid, you know, and there's a difference between kind of harassing people and kind of being a pest and shoplifting. And Marge thinks that she understands that line. She feels like, my kid isn't perfect, but he's not going to steal.
Right.
And I think that that's honestly how a lot of parents feel about their kids when they have kind of problem children and children that
are ornery.
That other parents kind of look down on. You know, I mean, this is a kid that earlier in the episode was kicked out of Milhouse's house because his mom could very easily believe that he was cursing.
Right.
You know, he wasn't cursing at that moment, but he's the sort of kid who would go over to your house and curse. You know, he's the sort of kid who would take – he's a little bit of a troublemaker, but he's not a thief. And that's kind of what Marge is saying. And mm-hmm. So, you know, the guard shows the videotape, and before he can show the tape, Bart says, Mom, I don't want you to see this. I did it. Mm. And they play the tape anyway, and you just see Marge's heartbreak,
yep.
You know, and Lisa even is like, Marge, I never thought you would steal. You know, I didn't think you would do this. You know, everybody's just kind of shocked, and Marge is obviously very embarrassed. And that's where they kind of cut to commercial. And, you know, Bart has this look just of utter, you know, sadness on his face. He can tell immediately how much he's disappointed his mother.
Yeah. And that was the first, goosebumps portion, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is serious. And, you know, we continue to see, when we come back from commercial, Marge is really disappointed. And I love the way that Lisa describes the situation.
I admit I haven't known Mom as long as you have, but I know when she's really upset, her heart won't just wipe clean like this bathroom countertop. It absorbs everything that touches it, like this bathroom rug.
The camera pans down and we see this bathroom rug that's just like a dark green color and super soaked with water and grossness. And it's like every bathroom rug you've ever known. But I, you know, it's a mixture of, you know, a kind of a funny thing. But at the same time, it really gets to the heart of it. Because when you think about that, it's like, wow, you know, that's, you can't really get rid of all of the stuff that's been absorbed into the bathroom rug, or in this case, you know, Marge's heart. So that
right.
That was kind of a rough moment where the sister was like, you really may have screwed this up.
Yeah. And you see it kind of immediately, you know, he goes to bed and he hears, you know, the sleepy train, you know, a parade starting in Lisa's room and Marge, you know, babying her. And then she just kind of goes to his room and says goodnight. She's like, you know, and he's like, well, you're not going to tuck me in. She's like, oh, I think you're a little old for that. You know, it's very clear that their relationship has changed and he can feel it immediately. The next morning, you know, he wakes up and they, you know, they're having cocoa, and he's like, "Mom, why aren't there any marshmallows in my cocoa?" And she's like, "Well, I think you're old enough to do it yourself." And there's this great side to gag where he puts his own marshmallow in his hot chocolate, and it immediately absorbs all of the hot the marshmallow absorbs all of the hot chocolate, and he like can't drink it, so he just pours it out and starts to slice into it. It actually looks pretty delicious. I'm not gonna lie.
I was gonna say, I wrote that down in my notes. I was like, okay, somehow I need to figure out how to make that happen, because marshmallow cocoa loaf sounds like a really good idea.
It does. And in fact, there's even a gag, you know, Grandpa Simpson's like, hey, pinch me off a slice of that. You're like, he's really excited about like he's like, I want a slice. But you know, and so the rest of the episode kind of continues showing this disconnect between the rest of the family and Bart. And so, you know, he sees them all outside building snowmen, and you see the scene. And she says, "Oh, well, you know, why didn't you invite me?" And she's like, "Oh, I figured you were too old for this. You didn't want to do this, but you can still build one. You know, there's some snow underneath the car."
Yeah, and we should, you know, I think it's important to kind of point out that whenever Marge and Homer, kind of the night of, whenever she didn't tuck him into bed, you know, she goes to bed and she explains to Homer that she thinks that this might be her fault because she thinks she might have overmothered him.
"I always thought I understood my special little guy, but somewhere along the road, his hand slipped away from mine. He's not my little baby anymore. Maybe I mother him too much."
And so throughout the whole rest of the episode, she's kind of trying to cut back on being what she sees as a helicopter parent. But Bart misunderstands that to be that she doesn't love him anymore. And really, right, what she's trying to do is solve the situation by fixing what she thinks is broken, not really pulling away from him and not loving him anymore, but pulling away from him because
she still loves him.
Yeah, she does love him.
She does love him. But I think that part of it is pulling away a little bit. I think she's so disappointed that she doesn't really know how to treat him the same way. You know, mm-hmm. She does love him very much, but she, like you said, I think she kind of blames herself, and then also feels like, well, you know, maybe you're not the same kid I thought I knew, you know,
yeah,
because this thing has happened. And
we have to include, by the way, there's going to be a link to a photo of, because as Christina mentioned, everybody else is building snowmen, and he arrives, and Marge is like, well, there's no more snow out here, but there's some under the car. So he puts together this dirty snowman, Bart, and it just looks so freaking sad. So we will have to include a shot of that.
It's one of those moments where like your heart just kind of breaks, and he sees the rest of the family really kind of busy with Christmas, and he's literally at this point, he goes back over to Milhouse's house, you know, Milhouse's house, and he's like, hey, Milhouse, why aren't you playing Bone Storm? He's like, oh, I got bored with it. I've got this really good cup and ball now. And then they start fighting over the cup and ball.
It's like the cup and ball that you're all thinking, like the one that you get in Easter baskets and that you can get for 25 cents in one of those crank machines, that kind of cup and ball.
And so again, you know, he gets kicked out of Milhouse's house because he's fighting with it. Like, Mom, Bart's cursing, or Mom, you know, Bart's.
I think it was smoking this time.
Bart's smoking, that's right. And at this point, you know, he's so kind of desperate for mother's affection.
This is so sad.
He asks Mrs. Van Houten, he's like,
Mrs. Van Houten, this is going to sound kind of dumb, but can I hang out with you while you do mom stuff?
He's at this point very much kind of realizing how much he was missing his mom and how much he's missing his family connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has like this moment where he's like, okay, well, you know what? I'll show them what, you know, what an outcast can do. You know, I'll show them. And you see him kind of running into the Try and Save. And before he goes to the Try and Save, he runs into Nelson, who's pointing out some of the things he's stolen because he knows that Bart will appreciate that. And
yeah.
And I think that also kind of makes Bart realize, am I the sort of person who wants to be this? And so
you have a chance, you have a choice to make here. And
yeah.
And so, you know, I'm like, oh no, he's going in there and he's going to steal. He's so upset that the only way he can show that he's distancing himself even further, because that's what I was thinking, is that he's going to distance himself even further.
No, and that's totally how it's set up. You feel like, oh, he's at this breaking point and he is feeling so lost, and he's feeling like he's been kind of dejected from the whole world, that he might as well, like, he can't sink any lower, he might as well just steal. And he comes back to the house. They're spraying fake snow all over the tree, and Lisa's getting very sick with the fake snow. And he comes in and Marge is, you know, she's being friendly. She's like, hey, you know, you can help me spray the cookies. Mm-hmm. Which makes me think, I'm like, are they going to spray the cookies with this fake snow?
Right. I was wondering that myself. I'm like, are these fake cookies, please? Because if they're real, I'm worried.
Yeah, no, Miracle on Evergreen Terrace, which is also a kind of a Bart-centric episode. There was a fire that happened with their fake Christmas tree. So it does make me, I would kind of assume that, yeah, they're probably going to be spraying this poisonous stuff on their cookies because not seem like the sort of family. Marge, as great as she is kind of stuck in like the 1950s in terms of like what's safe and what's not. And so you kind of could be like, oh yeah, she'll think that's fine. When she sees, you know, Bart, he has something under his jacket and she says, what do you have in there? What are you hiding? He says, nothing. I don't have anything. And she gets very mad. You know, what are you hiding? Let me see. You know, she's very upset, very untrustworthy. Mm-hmm. And, he opens up his jacket.
Oh, Bart, I can't believe you did this.
I wanted to surprise you for Christmas.
Oh, sweetie, this is the best present a mother could get.
It's a photo that he got made of himself at the Try and Save.
And there's a receipt on it that says paid in full.
Yeah.
And this is the part where I swear to God, I cried. That was such a sweet moment because, you know, they did it so well, the build up to this, that he's stolen another video game. He's stolen something and he's running through the house trying to get away so that she doesn't see it. And then he pulls out this gift that, you know, he's trying to win his mom's love back. And he does that with this picture frame that's the perfect. I mean, that is throughout the whole episode. Every year, he's always ruined the photo. So he takes this perfect photo for her.
And what's great is that earlier in the episode, when she tried to hang up, you know, the photo of him being dragged out, you know, it's not hanging straight on the mantle. His side is crooked. And she's able to put his new photo frame on top of the old photo frame and it balances it out. So it looks like it's a complete even family again. And it's just this great moment because you're just like, oh, this is wonderful. And she's kissing him. She's hugging him. And immediately she's back to mothering him, you know, completely. And,
sonnerly love gets tested.
Yes.
Because then she's like, well, because you've been so wonderful. And you know, this was, you know, you're showing that you really do, you are a good kid and that you are sorry. I'm going to give you a present early. And so she says, this is the present that the clerk said this was the video game that the clerk said was one that everybody would want. And so he opens it up thinking that it's going to be the game that he's wanted all along. And it ends up being the putting game that we saw at the beginning. But instead of being, you know, the Bart that we come to know in some other episodes where he would normally mouth off, he has a moment of like, and then he's like, thank you so much. And
he's like, this is great. Yeah.
The 1-2 punch really to all of my feels right there.
Because he understands that she still loves him and she's trying. And that's kind of the end of the episode. And then over the credits, they actually play the putting challenge, Lee Cavulo's putting challenge.
And it looks terrible.
It does. I mean, it's great. You know, you hear them doing the kind of the voiceover. The game looks terrible, but at the same time, it kind of looks fun. So you can like select your, you know, your putters. Like, I, you know, suggest this. It's like, you've chosen, you know, wood.
Now, push 7, 8, 7 to swing. Ball is in. Parking lot.
Would you like to play again? You selected no. That's how the episode ends. But it's a great episode. It's one of those episodes of, it's like I said, it's really, I think, just peak Simpsons. It's just, it's heartwarming in all the right parts. It's not maudlin. It all connects because you can really kind of understand where every character in the show is coming from. You can understand kind of, you know, Bart's initial longing and then his immediate regret. And you see Marge's struggle with the whole thing. And just to see, you know, and then Bart's, you know, after his regret, just his feeling of kind of alienation. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I think, one of the interesting things about both Bart and Lisa is that they represent kind of those points of view from childhood where you don't feel like you fit in. Mm-hmm. You know, Lisa, obviously, because she's outside, she's different. She's special. She's gifted and she's different than the other kids. And she doesn't really socially get along with them that way. And Bart, you know, he has all the social tics and he's great at that stuff. But, you know, there's something else where, like, he can't just be the good kid. You know, he's got other stuff going on. And I feel like they do such a good job of capturing that, I think, feeling that we all have where we feel like we don't maybe get along with fit in with our family all the time. We don't fit in with everyone else. And in this episode, I mean, it's such a great Bart episode to just really kind of show when he knows he goes too far, you know, when he kind of realizes how important it is for him to be loved by his family and how much he needs that as part of his life.
Yeah, I think that on one end, it shows, you know, in the beginning, we see what is too far for Marge. And then we also see that that is actually too far for Bart, too.
Yeah,
like you say, he wants to exist in this realm of still being loved, but being understood that he's the kid who's going to kind of act out because that's his personality, but never to a point where it loses him the love of his family.
And that's one of the things that I think kind of comes through this episode. Even when Marge is so disappointed in him, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning, she's so defensive of him at first because her special little guy, as she calls him, wouldn't do this. And then she kind of has to pull away when she realizes maybe he might. And then at the end, she's so touched by the fact that, no, my real son, you know, he might have made a mistake, but he is a good person and he's going to make it up to me the right way, you know, comes through. And no, I think it's a great episode. It's a great holiday episode because there's not a lot of overt, you know, holiday isms other than the tree and other stuff. But I feel like it just kind of points. It's a great kind of family episode of programming.
Mm-hmm. I love this episode, and it's one that I actually plan to share with my little brothers who both have a little bit of Bart in them. So this is something that I think is worth watching. For anyone out there who hasn't seen or is kind of wondering, hey, what Simpsons episodes or particularly the Christmas episodes, this is definitely worth your time. If you're the type of person who like cries at the Futurama episode where the dog is, then I think that this is an episode that will touch you.
It will touch you.
Not quite as extremely, but
no, because that's pretty extreme. But at the same time, it's so sweet. I mean, just seeing the juxtaposition of him, you know, with when he does the Snowman family, that kills me. It's just
that was heartbreaking. I actually, like, while I was watching it, I said, oh, gotta screen grab that, because that just is the, oh my gosh. There are so many different visual cues in this episode. Like you said, with the balancing of the family photo that hangs over the fireplace, and it's like the family is rebalanced again. Holy cow. And see, people don't understand that you can find that depth in cartoons, and it's like, it's there. You just have to look for it. And that's why we're not ashamed to proclaim our love for them.
That is why we are not ashamed to proclaim our love for them. All right. So that was The Simpsons, Marge Be Not Proud from season 7. Next, we are moving on to another Matt Groening show, his other baby, Futurama.
This is a complete juxtaposition of what we see from Marge Be Not Proud. Marge Be Not Proud is a very feel good and kind of, at least whenever we put it up against Futurama Holiday Spectacular, which is the show that we're watching, that we watched, season 6, episode 13, this is, far less serious.
It's season 7 on Netflix, by the way. It is season 6 technically, and that's where it is on the DVDs. It is season 7 on Netflix if you're trying to find it.
There you go. There you go. You heard it here first, folks. No. So yes, this actually has some troublesome stuff in it, and I kind of want to talk about that and kind of break down the way that this show, because as I mentioned, whenever we first started recording Cartoon Cast, I believe it was in the pilot episode, Christina, where I kind of talked about how Futurama has some troublesome decisions that it makes, and I think that there are some here. But what I like about this episode is that it does try to touch on different holidays that at least exist in the Futurama future, where it's not just Christmas, which in fact Christmas has been replaced by what's called Xmas, and it's actually super dangerous now. But you know, there are three different sections where we start with Xmas, and then we go to Robonica, and then lastly we touch on Kwanzaa. And with Xmas and with Kwanzaa, those both kind of discuss, I mean, so Xmas is not technically Christmas anymore, but there is a little bit of touching.
But there's enough of Christmas there that
you can recognize it, and you like can understand what Christmas is about in a sense. And the same thing goes for Kwanzaa. Like, you actually learn some real deal Kwanzaa stuff.
You do. And they're funny about it, but they're funny about it in the way that most people are funny about Kwanzaa, which is, I mean, because it's a fairly new holiday. There's a certain amount, I mean, they're not disrespectful towards it, but they're humorous towards it. the way that like most shows. I mean, because whether it's fair or not, Kwanzaa is sort of a punchline. It's an easy to go to kind of holiday punchline.
Yeah,
that's unfair, but they're not dismissive of it.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't take it and completely bastardize it. But we can't say the same for Robonica, which is supposed to be a play on, of course, Hanukkah. And we will touch on that when we get there. But I'm just curious. Those are pretty much my thoughts for the show overall. Is that there are some laughing bits, there are a few feel good bits, and there are some clever things thrown in and out. And then, like I said, I really like that. You know, we aren't just trying to touch on one holiday, but there's a lot of troublesome stuff to discuss in this episode. So, Christina, what are your thoughts overall before we dig in and go shot by shot?
Yeah, you know, so I mean, I think it's a funny episode. You know, it kind of came. I feel like after Futurama came back after cancellation, you know, it's a different show. I liked some of the jokes. I mean, especially during the Xmas segment, you know, I mean, it's definitely making fun of kind of the commoditization of the holiday. Mm-hmm. And I thought that actually the kind of the tie-in at the end with Kwanzaa was good too. Robonica, I have a couple of issues with. But no, I mean, I think it's funny. They kind of treat it like a Treehouse of Horror episode of The Simpsons, you know, where you've got these three distinct mm-hmm. you know, stories. But if I'm being totally honest, I mean, it's not in my top 10, you know, Futurama or anything like that.
For sure. For sure. And I think that, you know, the reason that this sticks out for me is simply, again, because of the way that it's set up, where we kind of get to touch on all these different ones. So, with that, I guess we will get going. Good news, everyone.
That's really good.
We start the show with, something that actually, Marge Be Not Proud starts with, which I thought was kind of funny. Like a lot of the really, really old, Christmas specials, the Marge Be Not Proud started with a Krusty special where it says that it's sponsored by, I can't remember what the name of the company is. And here, this episode of Futurama is sponsored by Unshelled Nuts.
It's the Futurama Holiday Spectacular, brought to you by Gunderson's Unshelled Nuts.
And then we fade in and, Amy brings some unshelled nuts into the scene and is like, try these unshelled nuts. They're so great, you know? And so I thought that was kind of a funny gag to start with, because that's how a lot of the old shows used to work, where you had to kind of mention Ovaltine in the episode. So, that was a goofy little moment. But then we pretty much dig right in, because it's Xmas. And, for those of you who have not checked out Futurama or don't know about Xmas, so, Santa is now a robot, and
yes,
he is an evil robot who
is evil,
bent on bringing death and destruction at the end of each year.
Yep.
So he flies with his reindeer and bazooka and tries to basically kill a bunch of people. So the whole Futurama office gets surrounded in this metal coat. But unfortunately, Santa makes it down into the office through the chimney, and he comes in and kind of blasts things, and they're singing. That's another thing that kind of exists throughout this whole thing, is that we've got songs in each one. And so, you know, he's talking about Xmas and all that kind of thing.
The ornamental armaments are merely superficial. The tinsel and the trappings are just icing on the missile. The one thing that you need to make your Xmas day splendid for us is a pine tree. A pine tree that's coniferous.
Luckily, he doesn't kill a bunch of the people. I think he ends up killing Scruffy, or Scruffy's asleep. I can't remember what it ends up being, but he notes that there is no pine tree, and you know, you got to have a pine tree for Christmas. Luckily, the Norwegians have a solution for that.
Yeah.
so we go to Norway, and we
yes.
see that there is a seed repository that stores like all of the world's seeds over many, many years. And then right next door is a germ warfare repository.
Yes.
And the window is flapping open, and it looks like it could leak or whatever. And Amy asks, is there a chance that maybe the germs could get into the seed repository?
Right.
And the Norwegian guy is like, no, there's not a chance. And then they go down inside. And he pulls some pine seeds for them so they can grow a tree.
Now, your pine trees were all chopped down to make emergency toilet paper during the 50-year squirts. Lucky the seeds have been preserved here in the vault there.
What's that splork on them? It's not germs, is it?
No.
And she sees some weird stuff all over the seeds. And she asks again, is it her chance right. that those are germs? Anyway, fast forward to a year after they've planted the tree. And we see that the tree grows and, yeah. you know, it looks nice. So
it looks nice. It's like 6 feet tall or so.
Yeah. It's just a good old normal tree. And the president comes.
Yes. Nixon.
And sees the tree.
He's like, I'm taking this.
And I love how, was it Cheney that's right next to him? He's yes. like, as your vice president, I order you to steal that tree.
Yes, yes, yes. Nixon never gets old on Futurama to me. It's never not funny that Richard
oh,
Nixon.
Oh, no. I love it.
I love him. And in this episode, I love that Al Gore, you know, who is part of the show, whose daughter was a writer on the show, you know, is a voice of the show. It's very funny.
Yes. And he keeps making appearances as...
He keeps making appearances. He makes appearances in all three segments. Yeah.
Anyway, so they steal the tree and he gives his speech and it's supposed to be like, you know, feel good about this because we're finally having a pine tree again. But then suddenly we see this rumbling happen.
Oh no! Could the seed have been contaminated by a virus from the germ vault?
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
We see that the tree is suddenly sprouting these pine cones that are also bombs. They're like seed pods, of course, but they also explode and they spread seeds all over the world. So
right.
suddenly...
So basically the world is getting, like, being, like, planted, reseeded, with, like, reforested with bombs.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it's funny because, you know, the scene kind of passes and then Leela is like, well, this is probably a good thing for the Earth. And they're all like, yeah, actually it is a good thing for the Earth because now there's going to be a lot of oxygen and yep. not very much, you know, greenhouse gases and things like that.
Right.
Except Bender
Except
has
Bender,
to-
because Bender has to be, I mean, Bender has to like lead to the end of humanity. Always.
You know, I don't recall having done anything for a while, but I still feel I deserve a smoke. Hey, cool. The air's on fire. Ho, ho, ho.
So
basically the Earth blows up is basically what happens.
Yeah, all thanks to Bender. Well, I guess all thanks to, Xmas, frankly, because it was all Santa Claus's idea. So maybe he had that in his plans all along.
I was going to say, I actually think that that's kind of the brilliant part of this episode is that Santa Claus does ultimately get to blow the whole world up exactly as he wanted to.
He is a devious.
I mean, it was
soul.
A long con. It took like a year, right? Like it took a while. Like he was like, you know what? I didn't get you this year, mofos, but next year, this is what's going to happen.
He had his elves working on that plan for a good long while. Now, speaking of good long while, segue. Now, here, I think that this portion, it's a lot shorter than the rest of them. And I did think in that sense, it left much to be desired. I understand that we've had a whole episode devoted to Xmas and setting it up. But at the same time, we saw how devious, in that previous episode, how devious and how much of a character the Santa Claus character is.
Yes, that was the one thing that kind of like made me miss it because I'm like, you know, Santa's such an evil bastard and you kind of want to see more of that.
Exactly. Yeah. I was disappointed that it ended up kind of being the trees that did the bidding and Bender's selfishness that was the undoing. I think that there was a chance more there, but
yeah, because Bender's unselfishness always is the underlying thing. Like it would have been nice if it had been something maybe different for once.
Right. And I guess, you know, most of all, this might have just been we got to touch on Xmas, but let's get these out of the way and get to the other ones. Maybe that's what the writers were thinking because there's a little bit more meat in the rest of the episode. So now we have, you know, the curtain closes and we open up again, and this time actually Professor Farnsworth is like, yo, Xmas is over. We need to get rid of all these gifts that didn't get given out or that were thrown away or whatever. And Bender's like,
whoa. How can we get off for every dumb human holiday, but not for robot holidays?
Oh, Lord, not Robonica.
I'm talking about Robonica.
And so then they all ask what Bender's holiday is. And he proceeds to sing a song that is filled with Jewish tropes.
Yes, it's Robonica. I mean, yes. You know, and I mean, I think that it's fair to say that many of the people who worked on this episode, many people involved with Futurama are, you know, Jewish mm-hmm. and probably are pulling from their own kind of, you know, history with this. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the fact that there are a whole lot of tropes in this, too.
For sure. I have to do a small SO to Steve Lubitz here. Steve is, of course, one of the hosts of Isometric and just an all-around super cool dude. And he is someone who I've gone to in the past when I am actually trying to learn more about Jewish culture and Hanukkah and things like that, and kind of why some people spell it with an H and some people spell it with a CH and all of that kind of stuff. And so I regularly see conversations that he has and have conversations with him about, you know, Christmas and how it kind of eclipses Hanukkah
yep.
and all of that. And so I think that especially now, that's why this episode or this portion of the episode really kind of got to me. But at the same time, yes, I think that there are some writers who are comfortable with making light of situations, because I imagine the same, you know, whenever we're going to get to this, but Kwanzaa, the Hermes and La Barbara and Barbados Slim and these different characters are, of course, African American. And, you know, in the same way that they're comfortable and happy to poke fun in those ways with that, I imagine the same thing applies here with Hanukkah. And at the same time, too, you know, of course, I can't speak as a member of this, but this is Robotica, and it's its own thing in that sense. And of course, this is a show that's supposed to have humor. So we kind of, if we cast aside for a second that, yes, I think that we can both say, and we both do agree, that there is some, particularly damaging and ridiculous stuff in here. But let's dig in and talk about kind of, what happens. I mean, basically the whole point here is that, you know, Bender is like, okay, I want to celebrate this holiday. I want to do this. And one of the things that's involved in this holiday is that, two fembots, which are female yep. robots, are to fight in a vat of petroleum oil.
By far the most important thing is oil.
To keep the lamp light burning or to help the latkes broil.
No, we pour the holy lubricant out from the sacred vessel into this blessed pit so they can wrestle.
And so Bender pulls out his thing of petroleum oil, like the oh goodness, what's the guy's name? The Tin Man kind of thing, and pours it into the pool in which the Fembots are standing. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of, there's not enough petroleum.
Petroleum left. It's there for a number of weeks. It'll be there for like 4.5 weeks, but not for the full, you know, 6 weeks or whatever the period of time is.
Yes.
That they're trying to be done. And of course, the correlation here is that, you know, obviously with the story of Hanukkah, as they only had enough oil to last one night, but it ended up lasting 8.
Yes.
And that's kind of the whole kind of miracle of Hanukkah. So they're already kind of drawing an allusion here to the oil. You know, it's not going to last long enough. And you can see the setup that they're doing at the very beginning.
Yeah. And we will include a link. I found a link to, a post that describes the miracle of Hanukkah. But, essentially you have to have a certain kind of uncontaminated olive oil, whenever you are lighting or whenever you're using the oil, for the light. And so in this case, they saw that it was going to only be oil for, I think it was like one day. And, it's supposed to take 8 days to even get the pure oil that has to be prepared in a certain way. So they use the oil anyway. And for 8 days it lasted. And that's why Hanukkah is an 8-night, festival that is celebrated, by those who observe it. So yes, there are ties from the beginning to the end. So, I did like this because, you know, Bender sees that there's no, there's not enough petroleum oil. So they're like, well, let's go to a gas station where they're bound to have petroleum oil. They arrive there and the guy's like, no, we haven't had petroleum oil for, a really long time because the earth ran out of it. And then, of course, here's our Al Gore, who flies on scene and he's like,
1 unit of free, limitless solar power, please.
He's like, all right, that'll be $1 or whatever. And he's like, can I pay with a Nobel Prize? and this is funny if you consider that, you know, he'd won the Nobel Prize a couple of years earlier.
And this is his voice. I wonder if everybody knows that. Like, that's actually Al Gore who is saying that. So he's fun. So they realize that, you know, Robotica is not going to happen if they don't figure out some solution, and we realize that Professor Farnsworth realizes that what they can do is tunnel deep into the earth to find some petroleum oil,
right?
Because that's where it's created. Basically, it takes years and years and years of pressure and organic material, like dinosaurs, at this point, probably lots of humans as well.
Yes.
And so they need to go deep into the earth. Well, they get to this tunnel, and I thought this was a funny moment because they're tunneling down and they fall into an actual tunnel, and what Professor Farnsworth calls an albino humping worm.
Oh, it's an albino humping worm. Why do they call it that? Because it doesn't have any pigment.
Fry asks, why do they call it that? And the professor goes, because it doesn't have any pigment. And I just thought that was hilarious because it's not because it's actually humping the ship. No, it's, let's talk about the fact that it's an albino worm. So,
right.
They realize that, there's no oil down there and they've got to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into the earth. But the problem is, Bender, if we keep going deeper and deeper, the ship is going to, implode.
Yep.
Because the pressure is too much. But of course, our dear Bender is such a selfish a-hole, so he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He starts to go singing, the Bender is great for 500 million years. And basically the whole crew, everyone but him, is crushed due to the intense pressure. Basically, that's what happens. Basically, they're completely crushed. And so he just starts singing the song. And the next thing you know is that 500 million years later, the whole crew, everybody is turned into oil.
They all got turned into petroleum oil. And he's like, oh, they gave their lives for me, for my so I could celebrate my holiday.
They turned into petroleum oil. I thought they were selfish. Yet in the end, it turns out it was I who thought they were selfish.
That was it. He's like, oh, I kind of get it now. So he goes back to the surface and he decides to, celebrate Robonica with the two Finbots.
Yeah, I mean, he gets back and realizes that the petroleum oil that he dropped that 500 million years ago actually lasted for the Finbots.
Exactly.
And that's where the miracle comes into play.
So which is kind of the great irony. Like, he got rid of humanity. All of his friends are gone, and the oil actually still lasted. So.
And so I think he ends up even, if I remember correctly, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I thought he like tosses the oil aside.
He does.
That's Bender for you. He is a terrible robot.
Robot, yeah.
And so the miracle does come true for Robonica,
but it's at the cost of everyone.
At the cost of all human life, essentially, because 500 million years later, it's kind of a barren wasteland, and the Finbots are still going at it. So there's Christina and Micah's hot takes on Robonica.
That is our hot take on Robonica. Yeah, I mean, this is... It's so problematic that they had to, like, make Bender, Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part of it that kind of gets me... On the one hand, I kind of appreciate, and this is where I point out, I'm not Jewish. I did almost convert for a relationship that I'm not in anymore. I'm married to someone else, but I know a lot about Judaism. That's my rationale for saying that. I'm not, pretending to like practice the faith or be of it, but I have a lot of respect for it. And I've taken classes and met with rabbis and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me kind of likes that the episode even touched on any aspects of Judaism at all, because typically, you don't ever see the Jewish story told in cartoons, at least
true.
Not in the United States. You never see it done. I think Rugrats is one of the only shows that's ever had any sort of Jewish storytelling arc. And even they have, with the first season had a Santa Claus episode. They did have a Hanukkah episode, and they had a Passover episode, which I think is the only time Passover has ever really even been discussed in those sorts of things. And the Simpsons have done various, stories that have kind of touched on things. But Hanukkah is not one of those things that at least in the Western world that we really know a lot about, that we see a lot in our culture.
Well, and frankly, each of these, the religious aspects of each of these has been twisted. They did it with Christmas,
yes,
where they turned it into Xmas, and Santa Claus is suddenly this terrible person, and there's really no mention of the nativity or anything like that.
That's not even part of it. Yeah, exactly. And Kwanzaa is obviously very different too. But yeah, you're right. They twist all of them. So, I don't want to read too much into it or be too PC about a cartoon that is meant to be funny. But there are certainly parts of this segment that are sort of problematic, where you're kind of wondering if this was someone's first introduction to ideas around Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love this.
Right. That is, yes. If this is an education in what it is, then this is a bad education in what it is. But for the people who understand it,
it's funny. And it's probably, frankly, good for them to see any part of their culture represented at all.
I can imagine that would be the case, because I personally don't celebrate Kwanzaa, but, you know, knowing something that is a part of my, you know, my ancestry and is a part of my African American heritage is nice to see that. Even if it is put in a, you know, a being made fun of light, it's still
nice to see that it's being treated with the same reverence that you would treat Christmas or Hanukkah.
Exactly.
Which, and we'll talk about this more once we get to that segment, but I mean, I think Kwanzaa more than any other holiday is dismissed because of its newness, because of other things, and people don't think of it as being a real holiday, and obviously it is, and it represents real things. But it's usually not even like, it's a throwaway joke, not an entire segment.
Exactly. So that there, I think, is the value prop of this, is that each, and maybe that's why the first section was so short too. It's like, we talk about Christmas all the time, so let's just kick that out of the way and let's have some fun with these other holidays.
I think that on the one hand, we didn't see Santa as much, but I'm not really upset that the segment was shorter. I'm actually okay with that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just more like I like evil Santa. But yeah, you're right. You know, they'd already dedicated an episode to Xmas.
Exactly. So yeah, hey, there's some good to find in this. We had to chew through the cruft, but we got there.
We did.
So I guess let's keep on chewing and talk about Kwanzaa. So this time, the crew arrives at Hermes and LaBarbara's house.
Hey, what's up?
LaBarbara, Hermes, happy Kwanzaa. We brought a chocolate cake, but now I'm worried that might be offensive in some way.
Just sit down.
I love the bit where, you know, they're talking about Kwanzaa now, and Zoidberg is like, oh, well, we should get somebody to explain the traditions to us. And
yes.
He turns around as if he misses his cue, because he turns around and faces the wall, and there's a beat where we just wait. And then finally, Kwanzaa Bot busts through the wall. So it's as if, you know, Zoidberg had been given stage directions and then launched into them too soon. And I don't know, that was just kind of funny to me. Breaking the fourth wall is always a hilarious little moment for me. So, of course, we have to couple Jamaican music with hip hop and rap about how Kwanzaa works.
The seven basic principles that go to make up Kwanzaa. So sit your asses down and have some knowledge dropped upon you.
How accurate is it? Because I don't know a lot about Kwanzaa.
When I was younger, I did receive a tiny bit of teaching about it. And I do remember these principles of unity coming up. And so I can't say whether the words that they choose to use, the foreign language words, are necessarily the accurate ones. But I remember that it's based around these principles. And so, you know, that is what I was going to say about this, is this seems to be at least hitting, you know, Xmas and Robotica are kind of more bastardizations of,
yes,
of the faith, than I think with Kwanzaa, where yes, we're still making fun of it, but we're also kind of like, yo, a lot of people don't really know how this works. So let's talk about what Kwanzaa really is. And, I do want to do some real time follow up here. Unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith are the principles and symbols of Kwanzaa. And those were the ones that were mentioned in Futurama. I think there was one where the Kwanzaa bot was like, there's this one that I barely understand, so we're not going to really talk about it or whatever, but, you know, as the kind of joke, but they do mention the principles. So that is kind of a cool thing. That
is actually really cool. And honestly, I mean, I think that kind of gives this episode a little bit more cachet, like knowing that they're actually being accurate. Because again, I mean, I think that you can be dismissive of Christmas, you know, make it Xmas. I mean, I think that you can bastardize that. We all know kind of the nature of Christmas, even if it's the secularized, just Santa Claus part. We all know that. Hanukkah, not as many people know, but people still know the stories, and you can understand, you can see the parallels. It would be difficult. It would be impossible to do that with Kwanzaa, just because, I mean, you know, I was talking before about how there hasn't been a lot of Jewish representation of Jewish holidays in cartoons or on TV in general. There's been no representation of Kwanzaa on television.
Exactly. And how can you make jokes about something if people don't understand it? You won't get like the references that you get in these other ones if no one understands what it's about.
Right. I do actually appreciate that they kind of play the aspect of Kwanzaa straight. They have sort of there's ridiculousness happening outside. And I think the Kwanzaa bot is a perfect example. Like, that's great that he comes in like the Kool-Aid man, you know? Yeah. Like, I love that. And I like that there's still weird things happening kind of in the rest of that universe, but they're not treating the religion itself or the holiday itself like it doesn't exist or like a joke. I mean, they make, you know, jokes about it, but they're not treating the fact that it's being celebrated as a joke. That's actually one thing I appreciated even from the beginning, was that, you know, the whole crew is going over to their house.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not treating it as if, what is this stuff? They're like, we're going to spend time with our friends and celebrate their holiday.
Exactly. And that's kind of what each of these is about. It's the crew going and doing different things with the people that they care about. So there is a nice little lovely undertow to this. And I think, too, you know, as we've kind of mentioned, because nobody knows about this, the gag that we'll eventually talk about at the very end of this portion of the episode, they set up at the beginning. Like, we spent a lot of time explaining what ends up being shown at the end and the way that the characters end up dying, because if we hadn't set it up in the beginning, it's almost guaranteed that no one would have any idea what was happening. So yeah, this is being that it's so new and so unknown. We do get a chance to understand what this is about. It's certainly worth exploring and talking about something that is celebrated by probably a good sized group of people. So yeah, I do appreciate that. So I guess we should dig in. Kwanzaa bot basically explains that, with the Kwanzaa candles, which are these different colors, the candles are supposed to be made of beeswax. That's just part of the tradition.
If your Kwanzaa candles ain't 100% beeswax, you bring shame on your people.
Well, now that won't do. Husband, show a little Kaumba and fetch some beeswax before Kwanzaa ends.
So they go to our dear friend, the old woman that's also a lady of the night, who's just gruff and has been a smoker for 100 billion years, and, you know, is disgusting in everything that she says.
First, they're very excited that they found an all night beeswax place. They're very excited about that. They're like, oh my God, how did we find a place that was open all night?
And of course, it's because it's our dear friend who is up all night. And so, you know, she explains that the bees aren't making beeswax and they're not going to be able to get it from her. And we zoom in on the bees, zoom and enhance on the bees. And there are these tiny little pink parasites that are all over the bees. And so basically it's ruining their production of honey and beeswax and all that.
Which
kind of stuff.
Is not unlike the real problems that are happening with bees in our society.
Oh, so sad. The only way that they think that they'll be able to get the beeswax that they need is they fortunately remember that they once visited a planet that is literally a giant hive. And they're like, yeah, remember how we went to that planet and we vowed we'd never return because whenever we went there, we were almost killed. Well, we're going to go back.
Let's
to that
go back.
So they arrive on the planet with the giant bees, and they're all wearing things that allow them to understand what the bees are saying. And they are what Hermes calls kamikaze bees, because they're all running into each other. And once again, like the pine cones from earlier, when they hit each other, they explode.
What's with the kamikaze bees?
Man, my hive's been going buck wild since these blood-ganking butt crabs moved in.
The queen is like, yo, we've got a problem, and it's all because of these, I think she calls them like butt crabs or something like that.
Yeah.
And turns around and, oh my gosh, there are giant versions of the tiny pink parasites that were on the bees back home on Earth. So what are we going to do? Well, we are going to have Hermes put on his Kwanzaa robe and start to talk about the good things about Kwanzaa, like unity and bringing people together and working together, and, you know, not fighting, and all of these things that are actual, like, real values of Kwanzaa, which, again, super cool. And so the bees realize we need to, like, buddy up and stop saying terrible things to each other and running into each other and literally killing ourselves, which then they do unite, and they start, you know, talking to each other, shaking hands, saying that they're friends, yada, yada, yada.
Look, the spirit of Kwanzaa is killing the parasites.
Yay!
Yeah. But yay!
And when that happens, the power of Kwanzaa kills the parasites, says Professor Farnsworth.
And you think that it's going to be like a great end to the episode. You're like, oh, finally, the world is okay. Like good things have happened. Like, Kwanzaa has actually saved humanity, right?
Yeah, finally we have an episode where not everybody dies, or where not the crew dies, that kind of thing.
No, because this is Futurama, so that's not how this works. Basically, at this point, now that the parasites are gone, the space bees can be like,
"We're working together as a hive mind, finally,
dude. Let's get together. Let's get rid of these." So they turn against the crew, and they kill the Kwanzaa bot, and then they make them into candles to celebrate Kwanzaa.
Yes, so they cover the humans, they cover the crew rather in beeswax and yep. turn them into actual Kwanzaa candles, and we see the little tiny pupa. Larva bee lighting the Kwanzaa candles, and so
yeah, it's kind of adorable, actually.
It's super adorable, which I was like, oh, I don't know why I'm finding this adorable, I'm a terrible person. But really, I think like we mentioned earlier, had we not had this setup earlier in the episode, a lot of people would not have gotten that joke, you know, have understood it. Like, wait, is this Hanukkah again? Because the same kind of candle setup,
right?
So yeah, they kind of, it was a feel-good episode that had to end in a typical Futurama holiday yeah. special style. But overall, it was like, let's talk about the qualities of Kwanzaa and then let's use those to save the day.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's actually probably the best part of this. I mean, I think this is like actually, the more I think about it, the more we're kind of talking about it, I think this is kind of, and again, I have to admit, I don't know a ton about Kwanzaa, but I feel like I learned more from this episode than I have certainly from even school, to be totally
yeah,
frank.
That's
Like, I feel like, thank you, growing up in the South, where whatever, we did learn about Hanukkah in school, but we did not really learn about Kwanzaa. But anyway, I kind of appreciate that they treat this holiday with the most reverence. And even the end, you know, Kwanzaa kind of saves the day. And it's not Kwanzaa that leads to their demise, unlike the other holidays where it's kind of like the people involved. I mean, I guess that is kind of a thread through all of this, that it's ultimately people or in the case of Xmas, you know, Santa, who end up, you know, kind of leading to the end of all these things. But in this case, you know, Kwanzaa actually kind of saves the day, gets rid of these parasites. It just happens to be that, you know, when you're on another planet and you're an outsider, maybe yeah. maybe you shouldn't like stay in your lane. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I think that it was a redeeming end to the troubling episode that we saw before. Do you have any other thoughts, or would you like to tell me what you are watching this week?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any other thoughts. I mean, I think that I'm glad we watched both of these episodes. I think that, you know, obviously the Simpsons episode is a lot more traditional and whatnot, but I really, especially after having this conversation, I understand more now, like, why you wanted me to watch this one. Because I was a little confused at first. I was like, well, this episode is fine, but, you know, I didn't understand why we weren't watching the regular Xmas episode, to be totally honest. And but I'm glad we did it, because it definitely opened up some other things. And I'm glad that our real-time notes, we were able to learn that they did get a lot of aspects, it seems like, of Kwanzaa correct, which
is
cool. Yes, yeah, so the show that I'm actually watching this week is, we actually already mentioned it, We Bare Bears. Which is on Cartoon Network, and it debuted this summer. It's basically about these three bear brothers, Grizzly, Panda, and Ice Bear, and their attempts at integrating into the human world. And it is pretty awkward the way that they do it. So basically, they're the human world of San Francisco Bay Area. So they're in San Francisco and they're bears, and they're trying to kind of integrate themselves into that world, and it's really funny. It's a really good show.
I kept seeing promos of this show as I was getting my fill on the other ones, and I had never actually checked it out. And I thought, well, maybe it's with the promos, they seemed a little goofy, and so I wasn't sure if I was going to be interested in it. But if it's got your backing, then I'm going to have to check it out. And I'm always welcome to checking out a new show. And that the premise of the show actually sounds kind of funny, because I don't think that the promos really gave a good indication of what it was about. So now that I've kind of got an idea of them trying to assimilate with the rest of, you know, with humans around them, that's kind of funny.
What are you watching this week, Micah?
So this week I am watching Courage the Cowardly Dog, starring Courage the Cowardly Dog.
We interrupt this program to bring you Courage the Cowardly Dog Show, starring Courage the Cowardly Dog. Abandoned as a pup, he was found by Muriel, who lives in the middle of nowhere with her husband, Eustace Bay.
That is an old show on Cartoon Network, but it came out in...
I've never heard of it.
Oh my gosh, Christina, you have to... Okay, so it came out in 1999 and lasted until 2002, had four seasons, and Courage the Cowardly Dog is about this little adorable dog who lives with this old family. So there's Eustace and there's Muriel. Muriel is the really nice, stereotypical stereotypical old woman, and then Eustace, who is the really mean, stereotypical, crotchety old man. And the whole thing is kind of like based in Bizarro Land, where every episode features some kind of monster or creature or alien or, you know, mean thing trying to attack Eustace and Muriel. And it's up to Courage to try and keep them safe. So Courage is, you know, scared of everything, and he goes along trying to help keep especially Muriel safe whenever he can. But he's, you know, just like any dog, he's super loyal. And so even though Eustace is mean to him, like the main thing that Eustace says to him is, "You stupid dog, you make me look bad." And then he kicks him out of the house. And even still, Courage will keep him safe. So yeah, I know that there are a lot of unlocked episodes on Cartoon Network, so I would recommend giving it a watch if you can, because it is enjoyable, and it's also got one of those kind of bizarro art styles that's not, you know, it's kind of off kilter in that sense, and you can tell it was written by the ancestors of the people who would go on to write things like Adventure Time and those kinds of shows. It's just all very kind of a little kicked to an angle or something.
Oh, well, I will definitely check it out, because it seems like the sort of show that I would love. And anytime there's alternative art styles and just kind of alternative kind of shows in general, I love that.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it, and maybe eventually it will come to be something that we talk about, because it's a good show. All right, well, Christina, where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me at film_girl on the Twitters, the Instagrams, the Snapchats, the all things. Online. You can find my writing at mashable.com.
Awesome. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Micah Sargent, and I am at Micah Sargent on most everywhere else. You can find my writing at newsy.com, and you could check out some of Christina and my other podcasts by, I don't know, pretty much just going to one of our Twitter pages, where I'm sure we've linked those up.
And be sure to check out our Tumblr at cartooncast.co, because we do, I mean, we're not super, super active on the Tumblrs, but we're trying to get there, and I follow a bunch of ruined childhood themed Tumblr accounts that frequently have very funny cartoon memes that I reblog with abandon. So
yes, I do enjoy getting to reblog every once in a while, and we have been tagging our posts with M and C, so you can kind of see what our thoughts are on these different things. You can find the show notes at theincomparable.com/cartooncast/3, where we will have linked up like the Kwanzaa and the thing about the miracle of Hanukkah. Follow our Twitter at Cartooncast. That's all, folks.